This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
6:14 on a foggy Wednesday morning, January 7th. I thought it only appropriate to bring the chairman of the board back to talk about the shutdown of the government, because, again, it seems as though we've done this before. Andy Smith joins us now, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. How you doing, Andy? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too. That's a great, what do they call that, walk-in music or
bumper music?
When the guy comes in.
Walk-on music. Exactly. So we really are looking at the same thing over and over and over. And boy, I got to tell you, you know, I do this for a living. But when I get to think about the shenanigans that go on in Washington and how little I have anything to do with affecting any of that, it just kind of makes you want to go fishing, doesn't it?
Well, I'm skiing up here, but yeah, I get
okay.
your point.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Skiing, we don't ski here because there's no hills. We wouldn't go anywhere. It'd just be, you know, you'd just be standing there on skis, although I guess we could cross-country ski. Tell me what the situation is with the government and the shutdown, and where do we stand and all that?
Well, government shutdown, same place. We've been kicking the can down the road. They're going to have the same partisan divide on this that we've had before. People are angling for the 2026 midterm elections, coming up with issues that are going to resonate with the electorate, try to motivate their bases. They'll eventually come to some sort of conclusion, but it's going to be more of the same, and I don't think we're going to get any long-term resolution from this one any more than we did from the last one or the previous 10.
What are the stakes going to be here? What are going to be the talking points? Who's going to be going after what? Is it still about affordable health care, or I'll put that in quotation marks, affordable health care subsidies, et cetera?
I'm sure there'll be some of that. It's going to be the entire issue that has been pushed on affordability and the policies that may help people that are being hurt by the inflation and the lingering inflation. I don't think that the health care subsidy things are going to be that big of an issue this time around, largely because it didn't seem to work last time. Mm-hmm. So I think Democrats will pivot to some other issue. You got to pick an issue that's going to impact more of the country, and most of the country, frankly, aren't going to be impacted by the cut to those extended subsidies for Obamacare. So I think that there's going to have to be another issue. But the biggest problem that I think the Democrats face is, you know, what the heck is the next issue? We see that seem to change on a day-by-day basis. Foreign policy issues are places where the president definitely has an advantage over Democrats. But going into Venezuela, is that going to be something that's going to demonstrate enough support to help out with this budget issue? I don't think so. We're not really seeing that, you know, result in too much of a bump in the president's job approval rating. So I think the Democrats are in a difficult spot. The Congress is always in the the losing end of these budget shutdown battles. So I think that we're going to just see the president, the Trump administration basically hold its ground. Now, I will say the one thing that is hurting Republicans in this is that their majority is getting slimmer and slimmer with the death of Congressman Malfa out in California. They now only have, a 5-seat majority mm-hmm. in the House of Representatives, and there's always going to be a few. The 3-seat majority, excuse me. There's always going to be some Republicans that aren't on board with Trump. And if they can't get through that legislation through the House, whatever the new spending legislation is, it's going to have a hard time going forward in the Senate.
So, as you say that, I think that traditionally, like I remember from political science in college, I've taken a course or two, Andy. So settle back, and I know you're going to be awed here in a minute, but I remember, learning that presidents, for whatever reason, tended to deal more with foreign policy than the bureaucracy, because they could influence foreign policy more than they could the bureaucracy. And with that as a backdrop, I realized that last year it was DOGE, right? That was the big thing. We were going to talk about the government bureaucracy. This year, it seems though, it's definitely foreign policy with what happened with Maduro. Has the president made any inroads as far as the bureaucracy of the government goes, or was DOGE just a flash in a pan?
I think so, that they have made an impact. Whether it's good or bad depends on your perspective of mm-hmm. what the bureaucracy is doing. But I just came back from D.C. My sister lives down there, and she's got her whole neighborhood, I think, works for the government or worked for the government mm-hmm. at one point or another. A lot of retirements. A lot of concern about losing your job, a lot of concern about budgetary issues, and that means that they're acting differently. So the bureaucracy is not acting as stubbornly as it might have been before with a different president. So I think that if their goal is to shake up the bureaucracy, they've certainly shaken it up. What it will settle back into is the question now. Will it settle back into more of the same, or will it be a new, more responsive bureaucracy to the administration, whichever administration is up to, still up in the air?
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Andy Smith, our friend, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. You got any questions, comments about a looming government shutdown? 504-260-1870, 620 on the button. Time for traffic, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Andy Smith, the director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Wheels goes round and round, another government shutdown approaching. So what are the deadlines for this? What are the timelines? What can we look for, something to start happening? And what is the likelihood, in your opinion, Andy, that a shutdown happens?
Be honest, I couldn't tell you what the deadline is. Frankly, I've been so busy looking at other things, I haven't been paying much mm-hmm. attention to this. But the likelihood that something will happen is probably similar to the last one, that we'll see something. I have to wait to see what the Democrats are going to push as their angle against Trump. And that's really going to be the issue here, and what the Trump administration puts in, or what the House puts in. So, as I mentioned, the House is in a much different position now. That majority is very small. They're not going to have necessarily the votes coming into the midterm election, because I think the Republicans are really afraid of losing the House, and the individual members are afraid of losing their seats. So they may not be going along with the president like they had in the past. I think it depends on the issues that come up, but I still think that we're likely to see a shutdown. We're likely to see it go on a few more weeks, like the last one did. Likely not to see a lot of upset people in the public, because last one, even though it was the longest one on record, was kind of ho-hum. And I think we're going to see a repeat of that same sort of issue.
I can tell you from the text I get, they go exactly as I thought they should after Maduro, or as I thought they would, which is the people that favor President Trump are staunchly behind him. The people that are against him are staunchly against him. If I say anything that in any way can be viewed as a negative toward President Trump, I get called an idiot. But look, I've been called an idiot by a lot more important people than the texters, so that doesn't even begin to bother me, right? So the point I'm making is, how far does he push his foreign policy thing? And politically, where are the road bumps for him with this?
How far does he push it? Well, that remains to be seen because he hasn't been stopped mm-hmm. on other issues. I mean, the idea of going into a country that we're not in good terms with, but we're not certainly, there's certainly places on earth that are bigger problems than Venezuela. But the fact that we've gone into a country like that and basically kidnapped a dictator, well, there's precedent. We did it with Noriega in Panama under the Bush administration. But that's a big step. Threatening to go into Mexico next, or Colombia, or Cuba. Those are big steps. The biggest step that he's talking about is Greenland.
That's crazy.
That's an ally.
Right.
I don't know where we go next with this, but the fact that I didn't think we would go into Venezuela because I thought that was too big of a step, and he went ahead and did it.
And what you said, Andy, to me, to interrupt you for a second, sums it up, because there are a lot bigger problems and more bigger enemies than that. That's what surprised me about this.
Well, I get we're kind of in like a sphere of influence grab, a land grab right now. We're trying to take over as much of the of things that are in our backyard, and that's frankly, that is the same thing that China and Russia are doing in their backyard.
Right.
So maybe Trump is saying we'll just get in on the same game.
So what he's going to keep going, as I understand him, he's going to keep going until somebody stops him.
I agree.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Give me a text at 504-260-1870. How do you define the American dream? Because we're going to talk about that when we come back. Recent report says the American dream costs $5 million over a lifetime to be able to afford it. Before we can decide whether we can afford it, let's decide what it is. Text me at 504-260-1870. How do you define the American dream? Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 6:45, quarter till 7. How do you define the American dream, and can you afford it? Are you living it? Caleb Silver joins us now, editor of People Incorporated and People Inc. and editor-in-chief of Investopedia. And this story really got my attention. Good morning, Caleb. How are you?
Good. Great to be with you.
Let's talk about the American dream. How do you even go about defining it?
Yeah, well, we asked people, what constitutes the American dream? What are the elements that are important to you? And we're talking really about the wants, not the needs. And when we survey our readers, and we have millions of them, they say retirement's at the top of that list. Being able to retire comfortably, premium health care when they need it, not just the basics. Also, home ownership, still very important to more than 75% of our readers. And raising a couple of kids, sending them to college, that's important. Having a few new cars over your adult lifetime, maybe taking an annual vacation. Again, these are the wants, not the needs. We assume that people are going to be able to or are going to want to be able to feed themselves and take care of their families and have a place to live. But if you want to have that dream, we priced it out given today's costs, given the rise of inflation. And we looked at that over the course of an adult lifetime, 25 to 65, and that's going to be over $5 million.
That is incredible. Do you have any prior statistics to indicate that this is going up, down?
Oh, yeah, we do this every year, and last year it was a little over $4 million. This year we included more premium health care because as we surveyed our readers, they said that was more important to them, not just premium, but being able to get that service when they needed it, not just the basics. So this is going up every single year, and because a lot of that is because of the price, is because of the rising price of just about everything, namely the housing is one of the big components of that as well. But if you think about some of the other elements that are in here, raising two kids and paying for college, state college, even that's $876,000 over a lifetime. Now, when I say $5 million, $5+ million, you don't need that money today if you're beginning to build this journey for yourself. But this is how much it's going to cost you over your working adult lifetime. But the median income for folks, if they work from 25 to 65, that'll only bring them a little over $3 million. So there's this $2 million gap that you have to fill somehow if you want to have these things that are important to you. And the only way to fill that really is through investing.
I got to tell you, one thing that jumped out at me, and I presume this was a representative survey across all different genders, all different age groups.
Absolutely.
Was retiring in comfort, because so many people, 86%, that was the number one answer, along with affording quality health care. So many people are concerned about retirement, but it seems as though they're not really doing anything actively to put themselves in a position to retire comfortably, are they?
That's right. When you look at the average 401k balance, even for folks that are nearing retirement, it is only a few hundred thousand dollars. Well, think about the fact that we're living longer after we work, after we get that last paycheck. So though every year costs incrementally more money. So there's the fact that we need more to retire, but we're not saving enough. Some of that is through 401k plans. Some of that is through IRAs. But the cost of living, even when we stop working, that continues to rise. So that number, $1.6 million, gives you a comfortable retirement income for about 30 years post-work, post-paycheck, post-65. Now, we know a lot of older folks are working longer because they have to or they want to. Again, this $5 million, everybody's American dream has a different price tag on it, but these are the basics pinned to today's prices given inflation and given the rise of inflation on average going out for the next several years.
Something else that jumped up and slapped me in my little face is a lifetime supply of new cars costs $900,346. That's up from $811,000. A lifetime of home ownership costs $957,595, up from $929,000. So it seems as though it's not just my imagination where the price of cars is really getting crazy.
Yeah, the price of cars has been rising year after year. Owning a home, home ownership, we know, continues to be out of reach for so many people. Home affordability as at an all-time low. So we looked at the median home price around $400,000. We looked at what a 30-year mortgage average would be right now if you were to buy that home and own it for that period of time. And that comes to almost $1 million, $957,000. Do you need $1 million right now to buy the home that is part of your American dream? No, but over the course of your lifetime, you're going to need this much money. Again, this is not a dollar amount you need today. This is how much you're going to need to generate over time if you want these basics in your life. Again, your dream may be $10 million. My dream may be $3 million. We all have different dreams, but if you just look at the price of the things that are important to us today, that we say that are important to us today, you're going to need a fair amount of money to get to that, and you're going to have to build that income over time through working and investing.
Talk about the importance of vacations and what the survey revealed.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody needs to take a vacation. Again, these are wants, not needs. But if you're thinking about the dream, if you think about the fact that we all work very hard and want to be able to reward ourselves and our family with one vacation a year for a family of four costs several thousand dollars. You do that every year going out 40 years, you're looking at $180,000. Now, some people's vacations cost $180,000 today. They're probably not listening right now, and I'm not one of them. But some people aren't even able to take one. This is, again, a want. Part of the dream, and everybody says, our survey respondents, over 60% say an annual vacation is very important to them. So is owning a new car. Not every year. So we did an average of about every 7 to 8 years. That's when people usually buy a new car. That's $900,000 if you're financing that car over the course of several years. And if you do that 7 or 8 times, that's how you get to that figure.
We'll take a break. I don't know where the survey went with this, but just my gut tells me we're looking at a huge disconnect here because the American dream, as defined here, continues to get more and more expensive. I don't know that salaries are raising with that. I know we talk about a K-shaped economy. I'm sure for those in the upper part of the K, they continue. And just to not to take issue with you, Caleb, but those taking the $180,000 vacations, they're listening. They're glued on the app, WWL app. They might be in who only knows, Herzegovina, but
they might
still
be on their boat right now on the yacht listening to your great radio show.
Exactly, Caleb. The staff, you know, that's one thing they tell the staff. It's like, look, keep the champagne cold. We want the hors d'oeuvres fresh. And whatever you do, don't touch that app. Keep it turned to WWL. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 657, 3 till 7, having a pretty interesting conversation with Caleb Silver, editor of People Inc. and editor-in-chief of Investopedia, about the American dream being attainable for most people. Most recent report says it costs $5 million over a lifetime to be able to afford it. Do you have any idea, Caleb, how many people can afford that American dream, that $5 million over a lifetime?
Well, given the fact that the median income is around $80,000 for an individual, but for a married couple, it's a little higher. It's higher than that. Not many people can afford that right now on their own just by working. And that was sort of the point of the study that we did. If you work your entire lifetime making that median income, again, you'll come out with something like $3.2 million over a 40-year work career. But if you want these things that people say are important to them based on our surveys, again, that's an ample retirement, healthcare when you need it, owning your own home, raising a couple of kids, sending them to college, having a pet or several over the course of your lifetime, marrying off one of your kids, you're looking at $5 million in today's dollars. Again, you don't need all that money right now, mm-hmm. but over your lifetime, you're going to have to generate that type of income and be able to afford these things. Everybody's dream is different. Every price tag is different. But these are the basics that people say are important. Again, the wants, not the needs. And that's what it costs today.
Have you seen any revision in what people define as the American dream as it becomes, I think it's fair to say, less affordable, huh?
Yeah, and you see it especially with younger generations when they're considering buying that home or that first home. So we know that the home ownership is important to people, but if you're willing to forego that and not have that as part of your dream, that frees up about $1 million you can rent and you can have experiences with your family. So again, everybody's dream is different. Everybody's dream is unique. Not everybody wants kids. Not everybody wants pets or to take an annual vacation. But the basics of what people say are important, that's what costs so much money. And it rises every year with inflation. You can blame politicians. You can blame corporations. But that's just the nature of a capitalist economy. Prices rise. And so are these.
Yeah, prices rise, inflation rate goes up and down, but once those prices go up, they rarely come down.
That's right. They're pretty sticky up there at the top, and they keep rising.
Thank you, Caleb. Appreciate your time. I hope you have a happy new year.
Happy new year to you.
Talk to you again. Caleb Silver, editor of People Inc. and editor-in-chief of Investopedia. I'll continue to take text on this throughout the morning. That's our Taking It to the Text survey. How do you define the American dream, and do you think you can afford it? We'll be back. WWL. Yeah, you can trust me to jump off sides, but you can trust me. Ronald Surpass joins us now, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, former head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, a lifetime police officer, now a consultant to many departments. How are you, sir? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Tommy, how are you today?
I am okay. Let's talk about last time we got into toward the end about the structure of departments, about sergeants, lieutenants, and it is important, I think, especially when you talk about managing overtime. Let me take a step back real quick. Crime down in 2025, Ann Kirkpatrick saying it doesn't matter who gets credit for it. President Trump saying it's the National Guard, although they weren't really here, I don't think, for the latter part of it. Does it matter who takes credit for it? Does it matter if the National Guard was here? Did they have any role in violent crime being down in New Orleans?
Well, I mean, all that was really good until you get into the politics of talking about national stuff when you're a city official. I mean, the whole point comes down to this. A lot of people take credit when crime goes down, but you don't often see the same people there when crime goes up, and crime is cyclical. It's going to go up and down. The best course of action normally is to say, this is where we think we made headway. This is where we see challenges, and this is what we hope to get the public to support. And that would be for presidents, mayors, governors, chiefs, sheriffs. That's the simple recipe for this. This is where we want to go. This is where we've been. How do we get to where we want to be? I've seen, you know, it's easy to get dragged by a question from the media into these national debates, and that often happens to chiefs too. That wasn't their intention that day, but to get distracted by the national level is really not helpful for the people of New Orleans. But more importantly, the National Guard plays a role here for the last 50 years of my experience. But, you know, we talked about it before. What's the wedding cake of policing, right? The wedding cake of policing is the first base layer is the police officers that answer the calls for service from the citizens. A sergeant oversees 6 to 8 police officers usually, and their job is to mentor them, educate them, discipline them, counsel them, and approve overtime. Let's not forget that. Mm-hmm. And then the next layer, you know, the officers go out and they work the street, they answer calls. Sergeants are the direct first line supervision of those people, responsible for a mass amount of things to make those officers the best that they can be. Then there's a lieutenant who's going to usually oversee 2 or 3 sergeants. That's the first level manager. That person's responsibility is to have the broader view of the mission of the agency, more goal-oriented, less task-oriented, and look at things like deployment, answering calls, overtime, report writing to make sure the sergeants are doing what they're supposed to do. The captain would be like a branch manager of a bank. The captain oversees the whole patrol area, which has patrol responses, almost always have some sort of detective responses. And they're purely thinking about the goals of the organization, the policies, practices, and customs that they want to see done throughout the department. Then you have a chief that oversees 5 or 6 captains that does the same thing, but at the much higher level. And then ultimately, the superintendent is responsible for laying out the policy perspectives, laying out the expectations, and holding people accountable as the chief disciplinarian in New Orleans in particular. Other departments are similar. ultimate discipline action decisions come to the superintendent, and that's really one of their key roles because that sets the tone of what good officers can expect to be the level of experience, the level of expectations, and when bad officers are making the job more difficult for everybody involved.
See, I think this is interesting, and we're going to drill down on this when we come back because, our interactions with police are when we either get pulled over for a ticket or for a traffic violation. Or maybe we call them for this or that or the other thing, or maybe we're doing what we're not supposed to do. And we don't realize that there's a whole command structure behind that. We'll continue to talk about it with Ronald Surpass when we come back. 821 Traffic, WWL. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Ronald Surpass, our friend, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent. And we don't take in account the fact that a police department has an organizational structure, and while the police officer that you deal with, chances are you're not going to deal with a sergeant. At what point would a police officer call a sergeant in?
If they're involved in an event that requires advice or counsel on the policies and procedures, maybe, complex investigations before detectives are called, they would call a sergeant to say, could you help me get other resources from within the department to assist me on this, like perhaps crime lab or some detectives. And then that just keeps working its way up the chain of command. When citizens are most likely going to interact with a supervisor is when they have a question about the service, when they have a question about how did this happen. There's another interesting way that citizens will see the upper leaders of the police department. You and I talk often about the NOPD desperately needs a staffing and deployment plan, because if you're reducing crime with 300 officers less than what you said you need, something's incongruent, right? So basically, the senior leaders would be the ones who would embrace that kind of a deployment staffing plan and then use the findings of it to argue with more data and effective outside view of what the department needs to be. So that's kind of like the three different ways you would see supervisors in the organization, not just the officers who are out there working on the radio answering your calls.
Do sergeants review reports and say, you need a little bit more detail here, need a little bit more detail there, you did a great job here, et cetera?
Ideally, that's the key. And, something I said 2 weeks ago, and I'll say for the rest of my career, when police departments find themselves upside down, it's generally not that the policies and procedures are not well done. Mm-hmm. It's the actions of sergeants and lieutenants to ensure the people who are carrying out the mission are following the policies and procedures. That's why they're so crucial and critical. Every layer of supervision builds on one another, and one is no more important than the other. They're all crucial parts of a wheel, of a chain that has to operate efficiently, so that when the chief goes on television and says, I need 300 more people, well, there's a whole lot of folks beneath the chief that's been ensuring all those policies and procedures have been felt and have been acted upon, so you can legitimately say, this is why I need overtime, this is why I need more people, this is why I need more detectives.
And within all of that, where do detectives come in terms of the organizational structure? Are they always sergeants?
No, they're detectives, they're officers, and they're the second layer of the wedding cake. They do the critical investigations for people who have been victimized and need an investigation. The next layer of the cake is those who support the first two layers. And the fourth layer of the cake is chief's choice. Like, I want to do community policing, I want to do hotspot policing, et cetera. But detectives are often going to be officers with special training and special authorities to further their skills as detectives.
As a chief, would you spot somebody, a man or a woman, that you said, they got detective written all over them?
I think that finds its way. Yeah, sure. People who are naturally inquisitive, who write incredibly well, who are willing to take on that additional challenge of work. And then you have the same thing with people who want to be in a SWAT team, or people that want to be in patrol, or people that want to become a sergeant or a lieutenant or a captain or a chief. Those are all different attributes that you're looking for every day in the people who work for you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. The leader in the Vocabulary Clubhouse today, Ronald Surpass with Incongruent. Have a good day.
You're too much. Thank you, Tommy.
All right, we'll talk to Jeff Nowak about the Saints when we come back. 8:30 time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozen. 8:46, 14 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by our friend Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, another season under his belt. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. It's king cake season. It's warm outside. What is there to complain about?
There you go. And it's going to be a big press conference today. What is it that you think we can hear from, or we'll hear from Mickey Loomis and Kellen Moore?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is going to be the first year in a while that I don't think the GM is going to be asked whether he's going to fire the head coach or not, you know, that sort of thing. And so I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of more kind of an optimistic vibe around this team. And what I'm interested to hear, and I don't know if we'll actually get an answer to this, but, you know, how aggressive is this going to is this team going to be this year? Because, you know, I think every team kind of operates with timelines and, you know, whether you want to call it a rebuild or whatever. I think that that timeline does change when you feel like you have the quarterback to build around, right? Because I think it allows you to be a little more aggressive in free agency. It allows you to approach the draft a little differently. So, you know, that's stuff that we may not learn today. We may learn it down the line. But that's going to be the big story this offseason to me, is just how aggressive is this team in terms of, do you continue to kind of unwind the salary cap, or do you kind of feel like you've done enough and you can kind of restock a little bit? But I think this team is where it wants to be, and we'll see how it goes from here.
Yeah, quarterback window is an interesting point, because you got a guy that's not old, maybe as far as rookie quarterbacks go. Relatively speaking, he's a little longer in the tooth than most rookie quarterbacks, but still a guy in the beginning of his career, and that's different than, say, if you got a guy that's got a year or two left in him.
Yeah, and I think that one thing the Saints are going to be able to take advantage over over the next few years that they just simply haven't been able to for the last, I don't know, decade, two decades, is a quarterback on a rookie contract, because that makes a difference. Like, look at what some of these quarterbacks are making around the NFL. Think about Tua Tagovailoa making $50 million a season and how difficult it is to manage a salary cap with a $50 million player at the top of it, compared to some of the options that are going to be at your disposal when you consider Tyler Shuck's going to be making $2, $3, $4 million over the next 3 years, right? And so that's a very, very attractive place to be for a team. And you don't have to, you know, you say getting aggressive. It's really not being aggressive. It's just taking advantage of what's in front of you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at the Seahawks when they had Russell Wilson on a rookie deal, and why were they so able to build that defense and retain the players? Because I think that's the bigger part of it, is not only are you able to be aggressive in free agency, but you're also able to be aggressive in retaining some of your players, right? You know, you have a lot of young players that you've drafted over the last few years that, you know, Alante Taylor's a free agent. Chris Olave is going to be a free agent after his option year. And, you know, these guys are going to want to get paid. And when you don't have to worry about that $50 million contract hanging over your head, at least for the immediate future, it makes those decisions a lot less impactful to your bottom line. So you're not going to have to restructure as many contracts. You're going to be able to clean up the cap as you're aggressive. And I think that's a huge part of it. And what's the most important is that Tyler was able to show enough this year that you feel like, okay, this is the guy you can build around. And it's really just a matter of developing him, developing the young players on your roster. And, you know, all these rookies that you played this year, like, that's an investment. Mm-hmm. You know, would you have won more games if you had gone in with a bunch of veterans? Maybe. But, you know, you look at a player like Quincy Riley, a player like Jonas Sanker, like, this is the worst they're going to be, you know? And I say that in a positive way. Like,
I think that's a great point.
Year, that's the baseline. Like, yeah, players get better over time. They develop. That's why you invest in them. So I think, you know, a lot of these young players, like, you know, it only goes up from here, in my opinion.
All right, let me take a break. I think you're making some great points here about, man, bottom line, cleaning up the cap. Let's talk about what 2026 could look like and where the Saints are in trouble. Not necessarily in trouble with.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
The cap at where they could free up some money and what moves they would want to make to build a team around Tyler Shocken around the defense that is emerging. We're talking to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, the big press conference at 11 with Mickey Loomis and Kellen Moore. We'll carry it live during Newell's show, and then we'll have Jeff and Steve Geller on. Talk about it as well. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:57, couple of minutes left with Jeff Nowak, who I think is making some great points about the quarterback window, if you want to call it that, and improving the Saints team. Jeff, everything with the salary cap is why I got out of accounting and changed my major to communications. I mean, I can't understand it. My mind doesn't work that way. But where would the Saints, I hate to use the phrase be in trouble, but where could they maybe free up some salary cap money to help build this team around Tyler Shuck and some of the defensive players you just mentioned?
Well, you know, the funny thing, and it's going to, people might, you know, wring their hands about it, but guys like Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, bringing them back would actually save some money for this team from a salary cap perspective, because there's a lot of dead money, dead cap associated with their contracts. And when they're off the roster, you know, I think Cam Jordan would be, for example, an $18 million dead cap charge. So that's $18 million for a guy that's not on your roster. Now, you could probably split that over 2 years based on how you do it.
And look, if they can contribute, I'm not wringing my hands over anything.
Cam Jordan led the team in sacks this year. DeMario Davis led the team in tackles this year. DeMario set a new career high in tackles, 144. You know, Cam had 10, you know, I think it's his eighth or maybe seventh, 10 double-digit sack season. So, you know, it's funny, but like it's going to be Cam and DeMario kind of approached this differently in terms of how they talked about it. Cam said, you know, he basically played for half off this season and he had all the incentives in his contract. He probably wouldn't agree to that again. But, you know, that's going to be an interesting decision to make because those are the two guys on free agent contracts. Taysom Hill probably isn't back. We'll have to see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be some options there to free up some cap space.
If you're going to get aggressive, where would you advise the team to look and fortify the Saints?
Interior offensive line, no way around it. I mean, you got to find a couple guards. You know, Eric McCoy will be back. Cesar Ruiz will probably be back, but that position, that part of the offense has been a problem for years, and they just haven't been able to shore it up.
We'll be listening at 11 o'clock. We wish it was a press conference like back in the day with Sean Payton, where, man, we were tuned to every press conference for the playoffs, every this, every that. But there'll come a day. There'll come a day. I'm confident. Thank you, Jeff. We'll be listening for you at 11 o'clock with Newell when Mickey Loomis and Kellen Moore have their press conference. We come back, we're going to talk to Natalie Hinkle, our friend, assistant professor, and planetary astrophysicist at LSU, about President Trump wanting to put humans back on the moon before his term ends. And we'll talk to Alyssa Curtis, a WWL reporter who's had some trouble. We'll talk about it. Thank you. And fly me to the moon and let me swing among the stars. Natalie Hinkle joins us, assistant professor and planetary astrophysicist at LSU. Good morning, professor. How are you?
I'm great, Tommy. Good to be with you again.
Good to be with you, and happy New Year to you. Thanks for taking the time. So President Trump wants the U.S. back on the moon before his term ends. It's not as simple as just loading up the car and taking, you know, making sure everybody's gone to the bathroom beforehand and making sure you got some snacks and the car is full of gas, the oil is changed, etc. What is it going to take to put us back on the moon before the end of President Trump's term?
Yeah, it's a great question. And honestly, it's going to take quite a lot of work. Right now, even like it seems that people are calling into question the various orbiters and like launch vehicles that might actually get the astronauts to the moon. So we're looking specifically at like the Artemis II launch. And they even named recently like the four folks who are going to be going up there. And I'm, of course, extremely excited and jealous. So there's a lot of things that that need to really come together. I mean, right now there's sort of some back and forth about the actual vehicle that's going to get them there. Right now there's been some design for various rockets and various boosters. There's one that's called Starship. There's also some stuff that's coming out of like SpaceX. And the problem is just trying to get everybody tooled up that quickly to make sure that not only is a launch successful, but you can get all the astronauts to the moon safely. And so to do that within 3 years with almost no lead time, I mean, like, you know, there's been some work and some preparation for the actual astronauts, but getting all that technology ready to go in a way that you are absolutely 100% convinced that, like, everybody's going to get there safely, and that this will be a success.
And get back.
Actually a lot, of course get back. I mean, like, it's a lot, and you know, we haven't been to the moon since the 70s, so you know, there's a lot riding on this. And it's honestly, I think it's more important to make sure that everybody is safe, that they return, than trying to make it in sort of, you know, this very crunch kind of timeline.
So it's not like we have an Apollo command module or a lunar module and some rockets sitting in a garage somewhere, and Grandpa, much like his 75 Gran Torino, and I'm dating myself by saying that, is going to take the cover off and blow the dust off. It's like, oh, she's good. She's ready to go. Let's go. What do we have?
Well,
go ahead.
Even if you were to do that with your grandfather's Gran Torino, you need to make sure that, you know, there's enough oil and like that everything is like lubed up and ready to go. So like even that you couldn't just take out and be like, we're going to drive it across the country sort of thing. You know, it takes time. But honestly, we don't have anything that's sort of like mothballed and that's able to be used right now. Like that's just all of the shuttles that were available during the Apollo mission. Missions have since actually become using in pieces. Like literally you can go and see them like in Houston and in, you know, various different NASA Center museums. So right now the only options are like, you know, these various rockets and boosters that are actively being developed now. And that's scary because, you know, you want to make sure that everything's going to work the way that you want it to. So one of the options on deck is it's called a space launch system. That was what was used for Artemis I. But people are actually kind of concerned about it because it's not like as reusable as other rockets that we've seen might be, like that's come out of SpaceX. There's also a Starship that's coming out, but that also has some issues. So like, yeah, there's things are still kind of being sorted out, and a lot of this has sort of been the push from switching over from a more, you know, government-led program to now privatized. And so it's trying to see like who has what and what might be compatible. But even then, you know, there's a lot sort of under the hood that you might not know about. So right now we don't have anything definitive for the moon that can work all the way there and then all the way back. It doesn't mean it can't happen quickly, but it's going to take some time.
So is space stuff, or are you talking about trying to get a PC stuff? I don't know what I'm talking about here, but to get a Mac work with PC stuff, or to see if this program works with that one, a patchwork of stuff, is that what we're talking about here, Professor?
Yeah, it might end up being a patchwork of things. But right now, I don't know that anybody honestly knows how this is going to end up. Like, the current thought was to go with, like, the space launch system from Artemis 1. But I've even been reading recently that various programs, like, it might actually be opened up again for other bids from other people, for example, from SpaceX. And so it could be that it could be kind of like a mishmash of, like, different things from different people, or it could be that, you know, one company kind of takes the lead and then does it from start to finish. But honestly, like even right now, and I'm, you know, looking over an article that was published 5 days ago, like people don't even know exactly what's going to be used at this point. So, that's a bit nerve wracking, because not only do you want to, you know the hardware that you're going to be dealing with, but then you have to train the astronauts on how to use it. And you have to get all the flight people, like, who are on the ground also ready, and all the different, like, procedures and protocols and that sort of thing. You know, that takes time. Those are the sorts of things that you have to, like, practice over and over and over again, especially for the astronauts who will be undergoing, you know, a lot of changes to gravity and their bodies and everything when they're, you know, going through the atmosphere and then eventually getting out into space and getting to the moon. You know, you want to make sure that these procedures are extremely well honed, that you know what to do in every single circumstance. You don't, you know, want to be looking something up of like, oh, what do I do now? You know, you need to have that ready in your brain, locked and loaded, such that if something happens, you can pivot and make the best choices. And that takes time like anything else. So, you know, I'm not saying that 3 years is impossible, but it is a very hard push, I think, to get all the pieces in place for the hardware and also the people ready to get it in that tight amount of time.
Professor, I am reading from a text. This is a text that came in from a listener. I want that to be clear, and I'm going to read the entire text, because part one might have some merit, part two not so sure about. And it's from the last four digits, 2104, and the text says, I don't understand. We've been to the moon, so that's all we have to do is rebuild the Saturn rocket and go. If you need to make a few adjustments, that should be no problem whatsoever. That only makes me think that maybe, and I'm saying maybe, we really didn't reach the moon. Keep in mind, that's a text that I read.
Okay. So, we could rebuild the Saturn rocket. However, that would take even longer. So the Saturn rocket, that was around, you know, for a long time, but it is now outdated. And so if we were to go back, we take all the blueprints exactly as they were, we have to recreate all of those parts, many of which are no longer being built, mm-hmm. because we've moved beyond that technology. So then we'd have to tool up an entirely different infrastructure that's you know, now fairly outdated in order to build exactly what the Saturn rocket needs. So it's not even just starting with what we have now. We'd have to go back, you know, like figure out different ways to build these different hardware, this equipment, that sort of thing, put it together. So we have to then manufacture it, like actually, you know, pour it, you know, various things into molds. You know, you're making stuff out of metal, so that's extremely hard. Do that to manufacture it and then come together to build it. So we'd actually be starting basically two steps backwards if the idea was to go and rebuild the Saturn rocket. So with current rockets and things like that, they have much, much like more advanced technology, you know, that has really come along in the last, you know, 40, 50 years that we can take advantage of. So if you saw any of the missions that have launched, you know, sending people into space, and you see, you know, the, like, if you just watch any parts of it and you see the interior of those rockets, they look so much more modern. You have different types of like screens and buttons, but also safety procedures. The spacesuits much different than what they were, because we have much better fabrics and things like that. So you might not need such hugely bulky spacesuits. In most spacesuits, there are actually 5 different layers to protect the astronauts. So now with more modern fabrics and technology, we could like probably make that much smaller, much thinner, that sort of thing. But also all of the equipment that we have, we're taking advantage of all the leaps and bounds that have been made technologically in the last, number of decades. And we should be taking advantage of that. We should be using all the latest tech in order to really, make sure that these various missions, because it's not just one, this is not a one-off. Up on deck is like the Artemis 3 mission, where they're planning on sending some folks to the moon, and actually will let them walk around and be on the moon. And so we want to take advantage of everything that we've been able to accomplish in the last number of decades in order to make sure that success, keep our astronauts safe and have success in the actual work and the science that they're trying to accomplish. And, I'm also particularly invested in the Artemis 3 mission, because actually a friend of mine, she and I overlapped for some time. Like, she was actually one of the chosen astronauts for Artemis 3. And so super Dr. Lauren Edgar, she's fantastic, wonderful human. Really enjoyed our time together. We hung out a bunch, but I want to make sure she's good, she's safe, she comes home. And that means, putting everything that we've done, and at their beck and call to make sure that these astronauts are safe.
And on a lighter note, I think they have more cup holders now in the command module, don't they?
I think so. But remember, since you're in space, you don't have to set a cup down. You can just let it float.
That's true. I didn't think about that. All right, 9:22. We'll continue the conversation when we come back. And I got so many questions about getting to the moon before the president's term ends in 3 years that I don't think we have enough time to answer them all, but we'll do our best. If y'all have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, SEO Quinn or Jeweler Talk and text line, text them in. President Trump wants the U.S. back on the moon before his term ends, but can it happen safely? We'll be back, WWL. It is 9:28. We're talking to our friend, Professor Natalie Hinkle, an assistant professor and planetary astrophysicist at LSU, about President Trump saying he wants the U.S. back on the moon before his term ends and what would be involved in that happening. Professor, when it comes to the people that were around then, and I'll get to NASA in a minute, but really, I mean, there are people that have studied the theory of it, but is anybody around that actually was involved with all of that still?
That's a fantastic question, and I think it's something that actually is a bigger point that I think maybe not a lot of people think about. Earlier you had the question about, the Saturn V rocket and thinking about the hardware that goes into this and the actual launch vehicles. But it's really, the people are a major, major portion of what it is that gets, astronauts into space. And you need all of their experience, their heritage, and their knowledge of what to do, how to do this. So the last time we went to the moon was 1972, and so that was, a while ago. And while I imagine that most of the people who were part of that at this point have retired, I think that there's probably still some people around who could help with all these launches to the moon. And so I'm hoping, of course, also that all of their knowledge and the everything that they learned has been written down in some way, documenting what they learned during the various launches to the moon earlier in the 60s and the 70s. But of course, that's hard to know, and it might not be all the information that you could ever want. So in all likelihood, probably there's not anybody around who are active participants in NASA now that were around when the moon launches happened, in the 70s. So, but that doesn't mean that they're not, maybe still like retired and available to talk to, but it's not going to be the same thing. So it's an excellent point. This will be a new crop of people trying to figure out how to get to the moon and send new technology also to the moon. Fantastic question, though.
Yeah, well, the other question I had is when it comes to test flights or rehearsals, they didn't just go to the moon. They orbited the moon first, right? It was a progression where they went to the moon, orbited the moon, and then made sure they could get back. And from there, they attempted the landing. Can you just do a moon landing, or would you have to go through that again as well?
No, I think you'd have to go through that again because you need to be able to test and make sure you can do all the maneuvers that you think that you can do. But fortunately, actually, that's sort of on the docket for the near future. So it's hoped that in maybe about a month that the Artemis II crew, so this is made up of four different people, four different astronauts, that they will actually go and orbit the moon. They'll basically do a figure eight around the moon, so they won't actually get to land on it. In a month, that's the hope, yeah, that the Artemis II crew will actually go and orbit the moon in about a month.
So if that's the case, then you would think you'd have the background with the command module and the rockets, right? Then you go to the actual landing on the moon, which is no easy task, and then the getting it back to the command module. Accurate?
100%, 100%. That's exactly what it is. So basically, right now we're sort of thinking of like one system that they're really looking at, is that they're looking at the rocket and getting it out of Earth's atmosphere, and then being able to command the main module in that rocket to do these various maneuvers that will get them near the moon and then, you know, orbit it and then send them back home. But when you go and you actually want to land on the moon, it adds in two additional steps. So one, you have to have sort of a space station that will allow the initial rocket to dock and then stop at the space station and let, you know, the humans come out and then switch to then a third part of this, which is a human landing device. So right now it's called the Human Landing Services, that will then send them to the moon in some kind of capsule that will allow them to actually stop, you know, land and then settle on the moon. So that way they can get out and conduct the tests that they need to. And then they need to get back into it and then launch from that back to the space station. So right now, what they'd be testing, like I said, is really just one major component of three major components that would be needed to then land on the moon for the Artemis III crew.
So if we can have cars that drive themselves, and I know it's a lot more complicated going to the moon and back, but if we can have cars that can drive themselves around Austin, Texas, for example.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Would there be a way to have this fully automated where you wouldn't even have to risk anybody going into space?
The Artemis 1 mission was actually uncrewed, where they did test this and they were able to see like what it would be like for, just a purely automated mission. But basically all they did was go up and then go back down. Mm. The problem is that the more complicated missions that you're sending them out on is that like you're going to have to then try to account for every single thing that could ever go wrong ever. Mm-hmm. And that's extremely difficult. I mean, even like right now with, cars that, have the self-driving capability, you still absolutely need a human in the driver's seat to make sure that if something weird happens, that it can be handled. I mean, in no way would we want a repeat of what happened in Phoenix, Arizona about 10 years ago, where there was an automatic or automated car and it killed a person. So we absolutely need to make sure that like all that technology is there. On top of that, there is no way, I think at this point, that we could send people to the moon and have like automated things go to the moon that will do all the things that we want them to do on the moon in an automated way. And really with the Orion 3 mission is trying to sort of gear up is trying to see if we can create like more of a base on the moon as like a jumping off platform for other kinds of satellites, maybe, satellites that are going around the moon itself, but also potentially to like better understand Mars from the moon.
Does AI have any role in this, Professor?
It will have some role because that's, and I will say that, like, in this case, I think it's less AI, so artificial intelligence. It's less things that are trying to make decisions. It's more of very detailed and dedicated procedures. Okay. So artificial intelligence you can kind of think of as sort of roughly learning from some of the material that you give it. But the answers that, you might get back, they're not necessarily always correct. Wow. But it's seems correct based on all the other information. So it's not necessarily a foolproof thing. It's just, it's what, it thinks is right-ish. But when you're dealing with, human lives and literally billions of dollars, like you don't have the ability, you don't have the room for really that kind of AI slop. So for these sorts of things, I highly doubt that it'll involve any kind of AI, but more so it'll be very finely tuned, programs that are written by software developers and that are able to account for all these various things and make sure that they're right, and make sure that it's doing what you think it's doing and not just giving you semi-answer.
Real quick before we let you go, tell me, does NASA exist anymore or who is it? Under whose tutelage would we go back to the moon?
Right. No, I appreciate you asking. So NASA has been in a very uncertain state for the last year or so. We've had no idea how much funding is coming towards NASA. In a lot of ways, a lot of funding was cut. In the presidential budget request, all of the science the science funding was halved. But fortunately it's looking a little bit more positive. Jared Isaacson has been named the new head of NASA. And the thought is that under him, there'll be a better way to sort of try to get to the moon, but also to try to like make sure that NASA is still running and running strong. So I know that there's currently a minibus proposal, that I believe is in the House that's at least just been sent to the House that will basically keep NASA running in about the same budget that it was. And this is extremely important, as we talked about, to make sure that we have, like, you know, the people who are around to do all these things, and also to fund, like, the absolutely core critical science and technology research to get people there and to get them back home again. So I'm really hoping that, you know, this minibus proposal passes, and that we'll have a better sense of where NASA is headed, where all of our science funding is coming from, and where we can go as a community and as a country to really try to see, like, you know, how we can know more about space exploration, the moon, and all these different things. They're all connected, and making sure that we have the people, the funding, and we're able to train up new scientists. Like, that's so absolutely critical and so fundamental. And this last year has been extremely hard, not knowing what's going to happen, how we're going to pay people, if we can pay people. A lot of good people have left the field, and I really hope that doesn't continue in the near future, so that we can continue to have a really strong space program, not only for science, but also, you know, for the U.S.
You and I normally goof around serious conversation day, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great 2026.
Really,
you bet. Natalie Hinkle, Assistant Professor, Planetary Astrophysicist at LSU. Take a break. Come back. Talk to Alyssa Curtis about some blowback that she had after a story she posted. And I don't think she did anything wrong, but we'll find out her story when we come back. 940, 20 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 9:45, quarter till 10. Before you get yourself all wound up with immigration and ICE and everything else, let me just explain to you the reason why I wanted to have Alyssa Curtis on, a WWL Louisiana reporter. First of all, I know her. Secondly, I look at WWL as family, okay? Whether it's radio or TV, I think we're all part of the same family. And you don't attack family. And thirdly, I think this is important because you can't, on one hand, say you don't trust the government, but then on the other hand, decide to selectively trust them when they are doing what it is that you think should be done, and then say the media should mind its business when they're doing things you think should be done, but yet you want them all over the place investigating this or investigating that. You can't have it both ways. And with that, we welcome in Alyssa Curtis. How you doing, Alyssa?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. You don't attack family. You just don't do it. Tell me your story.
So we've been covering Border Patrol's operation here in Southeast Louisiana, and I've done a lot of that coverage. Every so often, every, you know, 2 weeks or so, we'll kind of do an update story. Hey, you know, these are the numbers that Border Patrol has given us. These are the amount of people that they have arrested. These are the amount of people that have been deported, et cetera, et cetera. I did one of those stories on Monday, December 15th. The last press release that we had gotten from the Department of Homeland Security was on Thursday, the 11th. So it had been a few days since we got an update. I reached out to them saying, hey, this is the last press release we got, or that's been posted on your media website. You know, it's been a few days. I'm sure more arrests have been made. Can we get some updated numbers so we can, you know, report those? We never got an answer. So Monday I went with the latest information we had, which said the numbers, or they had arrested more than 250 people. That's what we went with. You know, it was accurate. Everyone checked it. You know, we went through the process. It aired. The next morning, so Tuesday, Commander Bovino tweeted our story, you know, quoted the WWL TV account and said, this is incorrect. The number is way closer to 350, which I put out on several news outlets. He never said that to WWL Louisiana. There are certain ways that we can get information and use that. If he was on CBS News, like national news, because we are a CBS affiliated station, if he said that to NOLA.com, CNN, certain things. He never said that to any of those stations. I imagine he may have gone on Fox News or another station that we do not have access to pull that information from.
Alyssa, let me jump in for 1 second, if I may, please. Southbound Causeway is closed while they pick up the cones. Just everybody be aware of that. Now continue, please. I want to get that word out.
Yeah, important. So it wasn't incorrect. We used the information that was available to us. And in those comments of his tweet was a lot about, oh, fake news, they don't know what they're doing. you know, I hear that all the time. The other side of it was, oh, why would journalists need that? And like, why do you think you have access to that information? You know, they don't have to answer to you.
I just want to jump in for one more second. This is not about future plans. This is just about what happened and who had been detained, correct? Is all in the
past. It was just very straight and narrow. Wanted an update. How many people had you detained up to that point?
Right.
Anything that had already happened up till Monday. This wasn't, hey, how, you know, we know they don't give us future plans of how many people they plan to arrest or anything like that because they want to keep us in the dark.
Although he did say 5,000, to be fair. They did give a number at the beginning.
Yeah, they did give a number. You know, we've heard that number kind of change back and forth a little bit, but this was what had already happened that we were looking at. So I did another story Tuesday and kind of laid out everything and said, you know, here's the email that I sent. This is what the information we had. And we noticed in our newsroom that it was a pattern. It wasn't just me who wasn't getting information. Several reporters throughout, you know, however long they had been there up until that point, were really lacking responses from the Department of Homeland Security, or we would get them 4 days later. So we kind of just laid it out and said, we are trying to do the work that is important. We are trying to be journalists, and we can't do that when the Department of Homeland Security is not giving us the responses that we need. So we're going to be as transparent as possible with what we have.
I want to jump in real quick before we run out of time, and it concerns the social media part of this. And to me, this is all about what really angered me about this, in addition to your being family, is the government trying to back down the media and trying to shut you down and trying to intimidate you and bully you, not directly, but through social media, with people telling you to do what now? That they should do what to you?
Oh, yeah. People were saying, you know, go capture her, go arrest her, go deport her. She's a fake journalist. I told them, you know, I posted something on TikTok like, I'm not going anywhere. This is my job. This is what I do.
And you're an American citizen besides.
Yeah. So I just think it's important that, you know, we as journalists continue to ask the questions, whether we get an answer or not. But, you know, the public needs to understand that this is our job and we play an important role in society. And this is what we are supposed to be doing.
And your ducks are all in a row. You have everything thoroughly documented, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Screenshots of everything, emails are saved, you know, the whole newsroom is in line with all the information that we have.
I just wanted to thank you for coming on. I saw the TikTok video and I wanted to have you on to expose this, to tell the story, because it's not easy doing what you do. Being a journalist can sometimes put you in a bad spot when you're actually just trying to do the will of the people. And you mentioned even the Constitution and the Fourth Estate in your TikTok video. There's a reason, and you can't selectively say, well, I want the media to look at this, but not look at that. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, you know, all or nothing. And I don't think we would be better off with the nothing side of things. You know, journalism, again, is the Fourth Estate for a reason. And again, we play an important role, and I don't think people realize what society would be and government would be without journalists to ask questions and hold people accountable. It would be a very scary world.
Thank you for your work, Alyssa. You always have us if you need anything at all, if we can help with anything, and take it easy.
I appreciate it. Have a
you
good one.
Happy New Year. All right, Alyssa Curtis, WWL Louisiana reporter. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got planned for us when we return here on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sophia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.